And while we're waiting for Jim to join us, we'll answer the question.
Okay.
Area code 810.
Good morning.
Good morning. Who's this?
McKinley Thomas.
Hi, McKinley. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Listen, on the news, I think it was yesterday, what's her name? Meghan Markle, the Queen, gave her access to, as vice president of her Commonwealth Trust.
Oh,
did anybody
really?
See that?
No.
Okay, yeah. So my question is, what's the difference in a Commonwealth Trust and the Common Law Business Trust?
Well, common law trust that we use is based on the law of contracts here in the U.S. And granted, it started way back with Chancery versus Anderson, way back in the 1600s, and has developed from then. So I'm sure the Commonwealth, and that's what they call the British Empire, is the Commonwealth. So it may have something to do with that.
Okay.
Could be the business trust. Could be the contract trust.
It could be the contract trust. Absolutely. Jim Jenkins, you want to comment on that? You got any clues?
No, I think you did a good job of answering it.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I just thought I may have something new. All right.
Okay, thank you.
You're still welcome. Morning out here, so we're not quite awake.
Yeah, I got it. Believe me. Okay, let's see. Well, we'll have to wait for Jim to come in. He doesn't usually join us till later anyway, but most of you are here right now, and certainly Judy and I are here. So, morning, everybody, or afternoon, as the case may be on the East Coast. Today is Saturday, March 9th, 2019. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, investment advisors, or currency dealers. We're not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. And, today we'll discuss Today we will be discussing the use of contract trust as an estate planning vehicle designed to protect your assets. As usual, my friend Judy will be assisting me, and my partner Jim Knox will chime in with some timely advice a little later. So, good morning, Judy. Are you ready to get started?
Yes, I am, Carol. Thank you for always being so sweet. I love helping you with these calls. So, let's start with the basic. What are the advantages of using the contract trust?
Well, there are obviously many. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. But for most people, the single biggest feature is that you can become your own trustee, and quite simply, it means there's no one between you and your money. The trust does not rely on any state laws or regulations for its power or authority. The trust organization is a contract in trust format. It derives its legality and lawfulness from the Constitution of the United States, Article 1, Section 10, which preserves and protects the unalienable rights of all Americans to enter into a contract. And by the way, the Constitution itself is a common law contract. The trust owns its assets in fee simple, meaning 100% of the assets, and is managed by one or more trustees. The assets of the trust will never be subject to probate or inheritance or estate taxes. The assets of the trust are protected from third-party creditors who may have an issue with you personally. And because it's not registered in any state unless you're actively doing a business with it, your privacy and anonymity are pretty much guaranteed.
Okay. So what's involved in creating a contract trust?
Well, as I mentioned, this trust is a contract. And since we cannot contract with ourselves, we use a third party called a creator. The creator can be anyone you choose, your adult child, your brother-in-law, a trusted coworker. The creator temporarily, and that's very important, temporarily takes title to your assets and exchanges them into the contract trust. This, of course, is all on paper. The creator doesn't need to know how much of anything you are exchanging into the trust. As this is an exchange, you need to get something back, right? The creator gives you $21 and 100 trust certificate units. I usually suggest you give the creator $21 ahead of time or take them out to lunch so they're not spending their own money.
Okay. So does the creator have to have anything else to do with the trust?
One more thing. The creator's last task is to appoint a first trustee. While he or she can appoint anyone, the typical and most logical appointee for trustee is you, the original investor. I mean, let's face it, if you were smart enough to buy all that currency, wouldn't you be the most logical choice to continue to manage it?
Yes.
Yeah. And after the appointment of the first trustee, the creator exits the contract trust, never to be heard from again, with absolutely no further responsibility, duties, authority, or liability regarding the trust organization.
Okay. So can I be the only trustee, or can my spouse, if I have a spouse or a boyfriend, can they also be a trustee?
The trustee can operate with a single trustee, such as yourself. In the case of a married couple, one spouse typically appoints the other as co-trustee. You know, we've all heard the phrase, a happy wife is a happy life. So unless you want to keep all this a secret, you know, that's up to you. And Judy, you mentioned husband or boyfriend. Husband, absolutely. I would not suggest naming a boyfriend, perhaps a fiancé, but not a boyfriend. I'd like to see a more permanent relationship before you give somebody access to what is in your trust.
Okay, well, that's a good point. Thank you. How do we take care of our children with a contract trust or grandchildren?
Yeah, most people choose one or more adult children to be their successor trustees. Successor trustees simply take over the management of the contract trust when you and your co-trustee die. Now, one of the things we're going to talk about in a few minutes is certificates, and that is a good way to take care of your grandchildren financially. So we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Okay. So how can I be sure that the contract trust will stay in my family in future generations?
Many of us will be creating generational wealth when this RV occurs. Well, you can't rule from the grave. You can specify that all future trustees be a part of your bloodline, be proven by a DNA test. For instance, you can name your daughter a successor trustee, and she can name her children as successor trustees to her, but not her husband.
Okay.
We can also add a spendthrift clause so no future trustee, successor trustee, or certificate holder shall have any right to alienate, encumber, or hypothecate any interest in the trust, thus further protecting it from possible future reckless behavior or management.
Okay, so I want to ask a question right here. So I set up my trust, and I have a bloodline clause in it, and I pass, and I have an adult educated grandchild who's past 30 managing it. Can she change the contract or the trust itself? Can she change it to be not bloodline?
As it is not part of the original trust indenture, but merely a minute, she can, but, you know, you've obviously made it pretty specific that you want to stay in your bloodline.
Right.
So that's something you might want to discuss with her.
Okay, awesome. Okay, great. So I've heard that using a trust can save money on taxes. Does this apply to the contract trust as well?
You know, while the primary benefit of the contract trust is asset protection, it may save some money on taxes. Having your assets in a contract trust protects them from estate inheritance taxes, which is very important. You died, the owner of the assets. You, the owner of the assets, died. The trust did not.
Okay.
We've all heard that this RV will most likely not be taxed at the federal level, but it may be taxed at the state level. And certainly any income earned by the trust will be taxable. Not a good scenario if you live in a high-tax state like California or New York.
Okay. I live in a state that has pretty high state taxes. Is there any way to avoid being taxed on the RV in my state?
Yeah, there is. We suggest you domicile the trust in a state that does not levy a state tax. These corporations and LLCs have been using this particular method for years. We recommend Wyoming, as there are few, if any, laws in Wyoming regarding this type of trust. A mailbox in Evanston costs up to about $125 to set up for a year, and they will accept up to 5 trusts per mailbox, as opposed to the one that we were using previously in Cheyenne. We have a similar recommendation in Vancouver, Washington. In any event, you must maintain that address to keep the trust protected from any state tax. You know, while privacy is of the utmost importance, any mailbox rental will provide a USPS form which requires your name and home address. I also suggest you send the trust a piece of registered mail to further verify the address of the trust. And so you just send something. The purpose of this letter is to confirm the domicile of the trust is blah, 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 blah. Sign it, trustee, and leave it. You just leave it be. Have the mailbox place forwarded back to you so you have it in your files. Do not open it.
I see. Okay, I understand that. So I've got the mailbox. What's next?
Well, once you've completed a short application, we will obtain an EIN for the trust and create the trust with your personal information. The trust you receive from us is totally personalized for you, and every line that needs a signature has your name on it and is flagged by sticky notes to make it easier for you and the curator to navigate. Okay. You and the curator go in front of the notary, you get it all signed off, and you're done.
Exactly. It's very easy.
Yeah, it is. I think it's probably a good time for Q&A. So if anybody gets a question, please star 6. In the meantime, I'm going to read a question that somebody emailed me.
Okay.
And this is quite interesting. I had a question about something I read in Mark Z's post below. It's in the paragraph about taxes and trust versus personal exchange. This particular person who sent this to me said, I would really not to exchange in my name. The question is, one says we exchange in private, name only. Others say must use a trust. Do you have any input? Some chose not to have a trust and don't want bank being best friend in control. Any input? Mark Z, our tax and banking structure is supposed to change. Mr. C, and I'm assuming it's Mr. Cottrell, and I are exchanging into our own private names. We feel for now that trust can be hijacked. Always find a professional with these questions. Personally, I don't know how the trust could be hijacked when it's going to be used for the first time for this exchange at the bank, and you're going to be opening several bank accounts to protect the identity of the trust. And the member who asked the question said, keep in mind that a trust or LLC may make it a taxable event. Mark Z, I do believe that exchanging into a trust or LLC will make a non-taxable event into a taxable event. That is why I will not be doing it. In all the years that we have been, and most of us have been in this dinar game, we have read with certainty this will not be, in the Paris Agreement, there will be no taxes for currency exchange. How exchanging into a trust will make it a taxable event is personally beyond me. I've never heard that.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's not even logical.
It's not logical.
The trust can do anything an adult person can do.
Exactly.
A lot of the educators and so-called gurus that we listen to talk to are all saying if you're going to have over $1 million, the bank insists that you have a trust.
Right.
If you do not, they will provide a skeleton trust. And of course, my issue with that has always been that makes the bank your partner. And I don't think anybody likes any of that. Jim, I see that you are online here. Would you like to chime in on that?
Yeah, thank you. I think that what most people are concerned with is losing control. And that's where the bank is going to be looking at, okay, do you control this? And obviously in our trust, you do. Some of these revocable trusts, you really don't. And so I think that it's illogical to think that this could be a taxable event because it's a trust, as you were saying. I think it's logical to think that if you use the bank's trust, they're going to want control. Now, whether they come right out and say that is one thing, but trust me, they will take control. And I don't want anybody between my money and me. So I'm just going to stay with our plan.
Yeah. What do you think about the issue of taxes? It being taxable if you exchange into a trust or LLC.
I don't see how that can be. As you said, the trust has the same rights as any adult person. So if you look at the law, the definition of person is trust, corporation or other entity. When you look at the Internal Revenue Code, that's what you're under as a person. They consider you to be a trust, corporation, or other entity. So if one's going to be taxed, the other has to be taxed. I don't see that happening in this case.
The mere definition
of the word would prohibit them from taxing you.
Yeah, I would agree. So, Scott, thank you for asking this question, and I hope we answered it for you. I still don't see anybody raising their hand, so I will talk a little more about certificates. I mentioned earlier when this trust is created, you exchange your assets with a creator who gives you back $21 and 100 trust certificate units. If there are two of you, you get 50 units, your spouse gets 50 units, and you get two blank certificates. And that's all well and good. If you're a single person like Judy, you get all 100 certificates. But when you die, that trust certificate becomes null and void. So let's say you're a married couple and the husband dies. His certificate becomes null and void. So then up to his wife to determine what she wants to do with those 50 units. Does she want to reissue them to herself, which she can do? Or does she want to say, okay, maybe it's time now to take care of the kids? Mitchell and Bill are my successor trustees. I'm going to give them each 25 units right now. She has the right to do that as well. She might want to skip that altogether and think, well, let's see, Mitchell and Bill are going to be taken over at some point, so maybe I want to take care of Mary and Debbie, their kids, right now. So you can do whatever you want with them as the certificate holder. You have
with
to
the
let
100.
The trust. No.
With the
I'm
100.
Sorry?
With the 100.
Yeah, there's 100 finite units, yes.
Okay, that's
so, but if she's already, if she's got 50, she can distribute her husband's 50 any way she wants to.
Right, okay.
And she can also say upon her death, a request to the trustees, upon my death, I would like my certificate, my units to be split up in this fashion. So 10 to this kid, 10 to that kid, 25 to that kid, 20 to her church, whatever. She can make that request of the trustees. So certificates, well, they mean, oh, they're a pretty piece of paper. What do they mean? They don't guarantee you anything other than a right to distribution should you as trustee decide to make one. But if you have some units and Mitchell and Bill have units, everybody gets paid for their pro rata share. And we get a lot of questions about certificates. They are not purchased. They are part of the initial exchange. And I do hope that clears it up for some people. Anyway, we have another caller. Let's see. Area code 602. Is that you, Gary?
Yes, it is, Carol. Thank you. Question on what you were just talking about. If you say, I want 10% of the certificate to go to this person, 10% to that person, does that put that in another trust for that person, or can they actually get cash out from the trust?
That actually gets, if there's a distribution made, they get cash. Say the trustee, whoever it is at that time, that makes a distribution of $100,000. That gets distributed cash on a pro rata basis.
Okay. And the other question I had, on the $21, when we give that to the creator, I think it's minute one, we actually tape the $21 into the trust document. That's what I did. So did I do that correctly?
You did.
Okay. That was my only two questions.
It's evidence of the exchange. It's evidence of the exchange.
Okay. Excellent. That was my question. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you. Okay. Manuel, how are you doing today?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question regarding the, in regards to the tax event. You know, Carol, I really feel much better when the RV hits if I have this trust implemented 100% before it happens. I think that I'm feeling that the tax event, whatever tax event may be, I'm sure feeling a heck of a lot better about it at that point, don't you?
Absolutely. As Jim and I just mentioned, the trust has the same rights as a person, and they're saying it's not going to be no taxes for currency exchange. That's what the Paris Agreement says. It doesn't say no taxes for currency exchanges for individuals. for right. people. Just as no
Great
taxes
point.
For current taxes. Yeah.
Good point, Carol.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens when the tax, when actually, you know, we get informed of how this plays out. I've heard some other people that study this, too, that the tax may actually occur when the RV, the clock starts when the RV starts, as far as when, if any taxes are due at that point, if that's implemented. So, anyway, there's a lot of things that we probably we won't know about until it actually happens. But but certainly we'll having a trust like we have here in place is sure a whole lot better before the RV.
I sure agree. Thank you.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah, and the other thing is if Jim Cox can is there on the website? I'm trying to look for that letter. If there's like an example letter to send to our mailbox so we can keep it for proof of domiciling, is if there's a you know a one we can copy from to do. I don't know how to write it out, but is there a link on the website that we can look at to so we can send that letter?
Dang, caught again. I forgot to do that.
Shame on you.
I would do that, and I've got it, and I just got to put it on there. So today, I'm pretty busy later today, so I'll probably have it done by tomorrow afternoon. But I will put it on there, and Carol's asked me to put another resources tab on there, which I will do. We'll have some other things there, and I will write it in blood if I have to on a piece of paper here to make sure I get it done. And it's just a simple letter. You're just going to say, "I do what may concern." This letter is to advise anybody of interest that this trust is domiciled in, for me, it's Washington State. In Washington State, and that was my intent. That was my intent. And then you keep it sealed up, and you just send it to the trust and have them send it back to you. You keep it sealed, and you don't turn to anybody, don't open it until you need it, which may be the only time you'd ever need it, be probably in a court of law. And you may want to send two or three of them and send them return receipt requested, keep the green cards, and make it a nice little presentation to the judge, if that's the case, so he can see, okay, here's the green cards. Yes, it was sent certified mail. Yes, it was sent there. Yes, you have a copy of it. And yes, the judge is going to be the first one to open it because it's still sealed. And there you go. Now, what I did is I sent a double envelope. I got a 10 and a 12 envelope, and I put the letter in the 10, and then I put and sealed it and signed it on the outside of the envelope, my signature, as trustee, not as otherwise. And then I put that in the 12 envelope, and I sent it. And then when I got it, I have it in the 12 envelope, so I can present that to the judge, and it's a sealed envelope. And then inside there is the sealed document that I want him to see with my signature and my nomenclature on there. So that pretty much seals the deal that your intent was forethought and done right, and that they really can't argue with you.
Okay, great. Yeah, and great. So I'm still at the original mailbox place in Cheyenne. So that runs out. I'm going to switch over. So when I switch over, I have to do it again, correct?
Yes, you will.
Yes.
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 Well, now, that depends. Are you going to stay in Wyoming?
Well, I have three trusts, so I don't think that I can stay there. I probably have to move to the other location.
Well,
but it would
mean,
be Evanston, Wyoming.
Yeah, that one, yes. I'd like to move to that one. They take up to five, right?
Correct.
Yes. Okay, so you do not have to do it twice. Because you just say that your domicile is in Wyoming. Don't put the actual address, but they'll see the address on the envelope. So just say your domicile is in Wyoming. It was your intent, and you're going to maintain it there, and whatever verbiage you want to use. And then when you move to Evanston, that's still valid. You're still in Wyoming.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes it simple. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome. And just as a little aside here, whenever you do change mailboxes, say from Cheyenne to Evanston or to Washington or wherever, you do have to fill out IRS Form 8822B informing them of the change of address of the business, not just change of address, change of location of the business. As you know, we're trying to establish that the domicile is in that state. So, I mean, it's a form. You can fill it out online, drop it in the mail, and I would put a return receipt requested on it. Would you agree, Jim?
I would. And the unique thing about that, the moment you get it postmarked, since it's an administration function only, it's valid. You're not asking permission. You're not asking to make a judgment. It's an administrative function. So the moment it's postmarked, it's valid.
There you go. Okay. Manuel, you got anything else?
No, that definitely answered what I was thinking about. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, we've got one more caller, and then we'll get back to the program over here. Let's see. Area code 919. I do not recognize that number.
Okay. This is James. How are y'all doing?
I'm doing well, James. How about you?
I'm fine. Question regarding at the redemption. Is it necessary to have the full documents of the trust, or will an abstract of the trust suffice?
In all the years that we have been dealing with trust and opening bank accounts, all that's ever been needed is the abstract and the EIN number. Some banks, like Chase, did require the appointment of the trustee page. My feeling, and this is just my feeling, I mean, obviously I don't know. Nobody's been to this exchange yet. Is go in with your abstract and EIN number. Keep the trust in your briefcase. If they need it, you got it. In some cases, people only have the abstract, so they're going to have to hope and pray that I'm correct, and that's all they're going to need. But I really don't believe we are going to need to show the trust. Do you agree, Jim?
I would agree, and I totally agree about taking the trust with you. I'm planning on taking all of my trust that I want to use, in those travel suitcases, and with the wheels and the handle, and just take it in with me. And I'll have all my paperwork there, everything I'm going to need for my declarations and so on and so forth. And if you need it, you've got it. That way you can get through this process and get your money. Because I'm going to be opening multiple trusts right behind the mother load, and I want to have those trusts in there and ready to go. I'll have all of my abstracts and everything there with me to try and use just the abstracts, but they need to see the trust. I'm going to have them with me.
Good point. And as Jim Jenkins used to say, if they want the birth certificate of your firstborn, produce that as well. Whatever it is, whatever it is that they want, we're going to do whatever we can to make sure they got it. So, you have any other questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, so I think we should get back to the rest of our program now, Judy.
Okay, so here's a commonly asked question that we all are curious about, and that's how do we get money out of the trust?
Well, there are actually several ways. As trustee, you are entitled to a salary. And while this is taxable to you, I think it's still a good idea. And you can take as much or as little as you determine you need. If you find you can't make it on 10 grand a month, give yourself a raise. And don't forget, you're not going to have any debt. And you're not going to have a mortgage payment. You're not going to have car payments. Your trust, your other trusts are going to pay for all those things, so you won't have those issues. So 10 grand a month is probably too much. But if you start off at 10 and decide I don't need that money, cut yourself back. You're also entitled to a share of the distribution we talked about a moment ago, much like a stock dividend, if you, the trustee, decides to make one. Again, this is a taxable income. And, let the trust pay for your business expenses. You'll have office expenses, professional assistance, as well as automobile expenses. If you're planning a trip, make it a business trip so you can write off most of the expenses. Likewise with a golf or tennis membership. And you need to expand your circle of potential business offers, right? Suppose you're thinking about buying property in Europe. Why not make it a working vacation? Talk to realtors, pick up business cards, etc. I'm sure you'll meet a lot of business contacts on the golf course, tennis court, marina, etc. Maybe the trust could contribute to the cost of those memberships. And while I wouldn't try to write up the cost of everything, it's certainly a good way to pay for these expenses. The trust can also pay for your insurance. You can also borrow money for big-ticket items like real estate and new cars. You must make payments, even if it's just a nominal amount for interest. How about a 10-year renewable balloon note at 2%? You must make the interest payments, though, or the IRS at some point could consider it a gift. Another method is to have your first or mother load trust create and fund additional trust to purchase that new house or fancy car. That way the new trust owns the asset from day one, it is not a taxable event, and you don't have to make any payments.
Okay, that's a great idea. So if it's not taxed, Carol, and I put all of my money from the revaluation into the trust, will I be taxed when I take it out? So how, or how do I get money up front without paying taxes on?
And well, you know, once again, this is something we don't really know how this is going to shake out.
Right.
We're going on the assumption that we are going to be able to exchange into our trust, period. And again, I'm going to remind you, I'm not a CPA or a tax planner. This is just my opinion and how we may be able to take advantage of this one-time tax break. I think most of us have issues that we need to address almost immediately post-RV, whether it be outstanding debt, a new car, helping out friends, paying the IRS. You know, we don't want to pay taxes on this money if we don't have to. So at the exchange, how about this scenario? Mr. Banker, I now have X million dollars. I would like you to put $100,000 into my personal account. Here is my account number and wire instructions. Or open an account there. I would like to take $9,500 cash with me when I leave today, as well as a funded debit card attached to my personal account. I will need these wires to be sent, and here's a list of cashier's checks that I will need. I will need a pass-through account for X number of dollars. Then I would like to put the balance into an account at your bank for ABC Trust to begin a long-term, mutually beneficial relationship. Here is my paperwork. And again, the abstract and EAN should be all that you need. And, you know, obviously this is pretty simple, pretty simplified, but you get the idea. I think we should be able to ask for some money up front. And everything I've been reading and hearing lately reinforces that belief that I think you should be able to do that.
Okay, great. That sounds logical enough. So I'm concerned that I'm going to be overwhelmed with the paperwork necessary to keep me out of trouble with the contract trust. Do you have any instructions about what I have to do?
Well, initially, each trust comes with several PDF files that explain the trust, advise how to operate it, and with all the legal backup for all of it. We also have an extensive members-only website to which all of our clients have access, and Jim is constantly updating it. The biggest thing to remember with asset protection is do not commingle the trust money with your money. That is a major, major no-no. You also need to write periodic minutes to reflect your actions and give your future successor trustees a history of what you've done with the trust.
So that sounds like a lot of work, is it?
Well, actually, running the trust itself is not difficult at all. However, you may have a lot of projects you wish to start. Consider this. After the RV and this newfound wealth, do you really think you will be managing that money in your projects all by yourself? The numbers this may bring in are far, far higher than most of us have ever dreamt about, let alone managed. So don't expect to be able to live the life of Riley just because you finally have some money. Great wealth also brings great responsibility. I would suggest a competent trust management company to advise you, and you will probably want to hire your own personal manager or executive assistant. I would caution you to find a good headhunter that will vet good candidates. It is not a good idea to hire your grandson, sister, or best friend. Hire a reputable company to hire your personal manager and other employees. Make sure that the company fully vets the candidates to include full background checks to include previous employment, police record to include fraud amongst other criminal activities, previous marriages, worst case, they're harassed on the job, military background, and verify educational background to include delinquent student loans and a full credit check. If any of those previously mentioned come up, you might be tempted to steal from you or blackmail you or worse, kidnap you. Your personal manager is your liaison to all the rest of the department heads for your projects. They report to the personal manager, report to you, and you decide if you need personal time with department heads. Jimmy, you want to add to that?
Thank you, yeah. Here's my plan, and it's pretty much what you just said. I'm going to hire a personal assistant, and that personal assistant is going to be the liaison to all the other personal assistants that I'll have in the various entities that I'll be creating to benefit mankind. I've got a lot of projects I want to do. So my personal assistant is going to vet everybody and all the questions. So it keeps my workload to a minimum so I can do my brainstorming, masterminds, and all this other stuff that I want to do to benefit everybody around me. I can't do that if I'm tied down to the minutiae, the details. So your goal here is to start thinking large, right? Start thinking huge, right? You can't manage all of that stuff. Don't even try. Hire the right people, competent people, and then have a layer between you and all of them, which would be your personal assistant. That person is only going to make sure that you are not overwhelmed so you can do your job, which is basically to be the leader of an empire. That's my opinion. That's how I'm going to do it.
Good point.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
So, Carol, we've heard you mention, Jim and I and other people on the call have mentioned about other trusts. How many do I need, and do I need them now?
And good question, Judy. You know, all you really, really need right now is a mother load trust. You may have heard that we will need separate accounts for whatever currency you exchange. The key word here is account. You can open multiple accounts under the same trust. Further down the line, you will probably want to add trust to your projects, real estate vehicles, etc. Some of you have opened additional trusts now, and that's wonderful. But if you can afford to do that right now, that's great. But for those of you that money is a little tight, you can open up these additional trusts a little later on. You may also want our triple play, which includes a power will, durable power of attorney, and healthcare directive. And, you know, lots going on. You know, Jim and I and our staff will be around for about 6 months post-RV to assist you with your trust needs. You know, we're not going to be very far away. We're, as I mentioned before, we almost always answer our phones. And when we cannot answer it, when you call, we always get back to you. We answer emails. We want to take really good care of you. I know there's some other trust companies out there that, and people tell me, you know, I've been trying to call these people for a long time, you know, but all they do is send me an invoice and then they want to answer my call. What am I supposed to do with this? Well, find another company. if you're going to work with somebody in something this private, you want to work with somebody who knows what you're doing, who knows you by a few conversations, and is going to be there for you. You don't want somebody to just send you an invoice and say, okay, here's your trust, bye. So our feeling is we will be around for a while. So with that, I would like to turn the rest of the call over to Jim.
Well, thank you. And I want to expand on that, what you just said. We will be around for 6 months personally. That doesn't mean the company's not going to be around for a long, long time. That's what I was just alluding to when I said I'm going to have my main liaison is going to take care of that, and they're going to have a liaison representing my interests in indicator information. And we will continue, and we will hire the right people to continue making this company grow. Because this is just the beginning for a lot of people. Because as we go multi-generational, they're going to be building a lot of trust, and we'll stay on the bleeding edge and leading edge of all this stuff. We'll be there. So I just want to make everybody aware that we're really not going anywhere, except for maybe a little bit of a long-term vacation, but we'll always be available. The company will always go, continue to go. So, all right, here's an issue that just happened in my life. Now, most of you know that I lost my best friend, and he was also working with us. He died the 21st of last month, and it was very unexpected. He has been with me in this business before I met Carol and before we merged together for years. And he was also an international business consultant with me, and we had offices around the world. We still do. There was a lot of things that came to my attention upon his untimely demise. And that is, okay, did we have all of our stuff done right? Well, most of it. The only thing he didn't do is he didn't have all of his passwords current, which I just sent all mine to Carol, because that spooked me when I had to break into all his stuff, you know, and which we were somewhat successful. But while I was at his place and going through everything and teaching his children exactly what he had, because he was a very private man, he really didn't tell the kids because he didn't want them all high, you know, hot and bothered about this money. They now know about it, and they're in absolute shock, which is okay. they had no idea. They really didn't have any idea. He had an altered life, is what I think is quoting his son. I didn't even know this man had all this stuff. Well, you wasn't supposed to know. So one of the things that started sparking questions from them when they were looking around his office was everything had labels on it. And by label, I mean it said property of Pima Trust. and then it had a number, invoice number, or not invoice. Help me out, Carol. What's the word I'm looking for? Not invoice.
Inventory.
Yeah, I buy a vowel. Banner, give me a vowel. Okay. Yeah, inventory. So it was inventory control. So then he had a spreadsheet with everything that he owned in the trust on that spreadsheet. And then he had a, you know, one of these, like I have a little brother labeler, and he labeled everything. He even had a label. I found it on the, I didn't even notice it, and I've driven his car many times because when we go out and about and do our business, he didn't like to drive in town, so I drive. But I noticed the other day when we were looking around in his car, in the center console, when you opened it up, in the console there was a label for the trust that owned his car with an inventory sticker in it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, the guy was detail oriented, and that's what he did for a living. You know, besides working with me, he did computers, and he built some really exotic stuff. So I encourage people to think about that. If you have a trust, and I have most of my stuff labeled, by the way, and I have not been as good as he is, but I'm getting better now. Well, I discovered that he had done a superb job. So we just bought a printer here, I don't know, what, a month ago, I guess, Carol, something like that, a big one here for us. Mm-hmm. It's now labeled over to Indicator. So I've added the inventory sticker there, and it's on there. And so all of my computer equipment is all labeled, has been labeled for a long time. But you need to have evidence of ownership. So you don't commingle. You can use the stuff personally because you're the trustee. You automatically have permission to do what you want with it, you know, as long as you don't abuse the permission. But you need to have an inventory sheet of everything that's going to be in the trust. Then you need to put a sticker. Doesn't have to be a very big one. Just a little bitty sticker someplace on that piece of equipment so everybody knows it belongs to the trust. And that was one of the lessons that I learned with him recently is label everything. And it was interesting as he had a couple small safes in the house with, you know, personal paperwork and stuff. On the bottom of the safes was an inventory sticker. You know,
wow.
I mean, this guy labeled, I mean, he labeled everything.
That's
and
awesome.
That was a good lesson for us, is we need to make sure, and we've been doing this for years. John and I have been in this together since 93, and we had our office in the Bahamas. Everything was labeled. That was one thing he insisted on doing. Everything had labels, and which was great. And so I think that everybody needs to just sit back and think about that. Okay, now if I got all these things in my trust, how do I make sure that there's evidence of ownership in the trust and not me personally? Now remember, anything you have in your name can be taken from you. Anything in the trust probably can't. So let's say that you go out and you have a car accident and you bang up somebody pretty bad and they sue you. Well, if you have everything in trust, they only come after you personally and to the limit of your insurance. If they go around the house and see you got all these things and they assume they're owned by you, they will take them. If they have labels on them and you have an inventory sticker and you can prove they're owned by the trust, they can't touch that because you don't own it. You control it, but you don't own it. So that was the lesson that I learned from John in his parting is, you know, I have everything in the trust. It belongs to the trust, and it's not mine. So the his children were miffed initially because I said, well, all this is owned by the trust. It's in trust. You know, you just can't take it. They were miffed, and they were upset. And I assured them, don't worry about it. I'll make it work for you. And so what I've had to educate them, and it's been a bit of a challenge because they're starting from zero. And
right.
I said, okay, I am the successor trustee to all of his trusts. I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. And now I'm teaching them, and they'll become the partial board of trustees as they learn how to do this. I'm staying on all the trusts, all six of them, until I know that they're going to do it right. So there's a lesson that we just, that Carol and I know. We know this stuff. We may not practice as well as we should, but we know this stuff. And this brought it home that how important that one function is to make sure you separate ownership. And it's you have to have evidence of ownership. And that's very, very important. Otherwise, his children would just start taking things out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't realize that it was owned by the company until they saw those stickers. And now they've had to step back and say, okay, well, what do we do? Well, it's part of his business. You need to honor that, and you just can't walk off of this stuff. You'll have control of it shortly, but you'll never have ownership of it. And so I've been working with them. I think that's very important. And then when there's something happens to you and you've got a trust, now all of your children will know. If they don't already know, if hopefully they're not in the situation John's kids were in, had no clue, they'll understand. And they'll know that, okay, that belongs to the trust. I just can't take it out of the house because mom and dad passed. This is, you know, this is owned by the trust. Until they work a deal with the trustee to have removed from the trust. So that's, I think, was one of the few things that John did better than most. And I'm taking that and sharing that with everybody. Can you add to that,
and,
Carol?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when you think of it, oh, my God, that's an onerous task. But, you know, sit down. When you're drinking your morning coffee, start writing things out. What belongs to you? What belongs to the trust? And sometimes working with a labeler can be a bit tedious, but if you get labels, you know, Avery labels, do it all on your computer. Make the list on your computer. And then transfer it all over into a spreadsheet. And there's lots of, if you work with Microsoft Office, and I believe most people do, there are a lot of sample inventory sheets in there to use. So, you know, if you had to plod through it, you got to plod through it, but it's very, very important to get it done.
Well, he had some of it done that way with stick-on labels, and then he took some clear tape over the top of that label because, you know, they don't last that long.
Uh-huh.
But he also had the little sticky-on labels that, you know, he created with his little brother device.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how it's labeled, what you use, just get it labeled and always have that inventory on there, you know, your inventory
uh-huh.
sheet.
Yeah.
And
maybe
you
can look for a good one and put it on the website.
Pardon me?
Maybe we can look for a good inventory template and put it on the website.
Sure. Oh, you're just adding more work for me, Carol. I see how you are.
I know you got nothing else to do.
Right. I'm in the middle of moving. I just bought a pickup, and all of a sudden it's just like, okay, how much more can I do? Yeah, it's fine. We'll get it done. So that was the big lesson I wanted to talk about today is proof of ownership. Just have to make sure you have your paperwork done right. And John did an exemplary job.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, a good lesson in there for a lot of us. I mean, I'm guilty of the same thing. I'm guilty of not keeping up on that. I did a lot of it early on. I just haven't kept up with it. Yeah.
Well, I talked earlier about we need to have certain things done on certain days. Before we got on this call today, this morning, you and I spoke about that. And what we need to do is just what I've got 1 day a month that I use Outlook as a prompt to remind me. And 1 day a month I'll go through and I'll just glance at all my paperwork on all my trust and everything. And that prompts me to take the time, get a cup of coffee, sit down and go over that and make everything current. And it's not an onerous job and it's not really that time-consuming. You just have to take the 10 or 15 or 30 minutes to do it once a month. And you just have to do it because most people don't realize this is not just a trust. This is not just a business. If things happen the way we think they're going to happen, as I used the word a while ago, you're building an empire that's going to last multi-generation. You have to take this somewhat serious. So, you know, get your paperwork in order, keep it in order, set a schedule to review, and make sure you do all of the minutes in your trust as you do things. I have what I call a secretary's book. It's just what I use as a term. And I make notes. It's a little green binder. It's called, I got it right here. I use a one-subject college-ruled notebook, 100-sheet it's 5 3/4 inches by 8 3/4 inches, and I write in it constantly. And it's green because it's reflecting my income, my money.
There you go.
I have a black one, a blue one, and a green one. The black one is just I write notes to myself about whatever I want to write notes about, and I review it once in a while. The blue one is how I run my life. You know, my notes about what I got to do. You know, my laundry. I got to do this. I got to go buy this. And this is what I need for the house. You know, that kind of stuff. The green one is all about my money. And then I have an orange one that's all about the business indicator. So
there you go.
Get these things, lay them around, and mark on them what they're for, and just make notes. Now, here's a lesson also. This was years and years and years ago. This was, I was still in Alaska, so it had to be in the mid-80s. Yeah. I was witness in a trial. And I remember all the details, but the point on this is this gentleman walked in with about three of these little tablets, and he'd been making notes all the time, constantly making notes. And this is back really before the computers were really prominent. And when the judge asked him, can he prove it? He handed this little notebook, or three or four of these little notebooks, to the bailiff, and the bailiff took it up to the judge. The judge went through them very quickly, and then he simply says, here, give them back to the defendant. I go, yeah, it was the defendant. And he told the plaintiff, his guy's got better notes than you ever thought about having, so yours is hearsay, and his are factual, so I have to rule in his favor.
Wow.
So anytime you write something in a book, especially handwritten, it's proof that it was premeditated and it was done at a specific time. You put it on a computer, it can be manipulated. Now you have to prove that it was done at that time. That's difficult because it's so easy to change things on a computer. So I like using my little handwritten notes, my little tablets, and then I'll move it to my computer as necessary. I think that's pretty much all I really want to talk about today is how to control the inventory of the trust, how to protect yourself, and I like writing things down. They don't have to be explicit, just little notes. I always put a date. Whenever I make a note, I put a date above the little note. And some of these notes I've got in here, they're three or four lines long, but there's always a date above them. So, here's one, 2-3-19, banner address, 608 Shamrock, Oklahoma. Okay, so what I did, I made a note in here on that day about that. Now, what it means, they won't know, but at least I can explain what it was, and they'll know that it was done on that day. So good notes are important.
I agree.
And you always have a written record that way. And mm-hmm. I've got some of these tablets. I've got a box full of these tablets. I probably got 40 tablets in that box going clear back to the late 80s. I never throw them away.
When I first learned about trust, I was working with Jim Jenkins and Bruce Ripley, both wonderful mentors. Thank you so much, Jim, for helping me in this business. And Bruce was famous for using legal pads. Same thing. Dated him, wrote everything down, every conversation, every name, every telephone number, everything that we, you know, if we had an office meeting, he would write that down. And he, when we moved out of that office, I mean, he had banker's boxes full of all of those legal pads. So it's a good habit to get into. So nobody can ever say, well, you said. No, yeah. I didn't.
The same thing my whole life, yeah. Exactly what Jim said. That I've got notebooks that go back 30 years. I do, and I do this exactly the same thing. I have one notebook just for passwords, and you're covered that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good habit to get into. That's a good point.
Well, thank you, Jim, and looks like we do have a caller. So anybody else has a question before we wrap this up, please star 6. Daphne, how are you doing today, my dear?
Hi, good morning, Carol, Jen, Judy. This is Daphne. How you doing?
Hi, Daphne. We're doing great.
All right. I know Jim wanted to keep it to a certain subject, but I had a question in regards to the charitable trust. Would that be better for another time? But I wanted to know how it operated.
Shoot, go ahead.
I want to know how the charitable trust operates.
Well, as I've mentioned before, we've named it a charitable trust for your benefit. This is not a 501c3. It's not a foundation. You can't give people tax receipts. But we are all expecting a great deal of money. And we've talked about, okay, we all have projects, we have this. We also all have a lot of people we want to help. So my thought has always been, okay, set aside X amount of dollars initially into your charitable trust. It's just another trust. It's just another trust. But you've already set aside X amount of dollars in that trust for your charitable giving. And as far as the rules on what you can, you know, right now, IRS says you can give anybody up to $15,000 per year before it becomes a taxable event. Who knows how that may change? And we're all hearing the IRS may be out of our hair pretty soon. Who knows? But it's just a way to separate the funds you want to give away to the funds that you're going to work with.
Okay, so at this point, the tax on that is still like 39.6% if it earns money?
Yeah, if it earns money,
yeah. If it's not taxable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it earns money, it's going to be taxable from, you know, the state you're in, federally. If it, and again, it all depends what the tax code is after it's all said and done.
And that's taxed on the interest that the investment makes, that's all.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Just wanted to clarify. I still didn't know that, but I just wanted to ask. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have any questions?
I have a question, Carol and Jim.
Sure.
Fast forward a couple of years down the road, this is just an example, and I'm using myself as an example. I've been involved in another investments over the years, and one comes to fruition. In other words, the money's going to be available to me. May I put that money in one of my existing, like in my motherlode trust?
I wouldn't. I would not put anything else into your motherlode trust. In your case, you have several other trusts not necessarily designated for anything right now. So
right.
Let's say, and I know what you're talking about, let's say this other event does happen, the money
right.
should go into one of those trusts. You know, start
okay.
clean, keep it separate. Jim, you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't want to commingle. You don't want to raise questions and then have to prove yourself, because that would give them an opportunity to start looking at the rest of your activities. I mean, look at what's going on with the President of the United States right now. They're looking at everything he's ever done because somebody said something. You know, so now we're in the same position. If we do something and it gets questioned, they'll look at everything you've ever done. That, you know, the judicial system is just nuts. So,
yeah. Well, I haven't done anything to worry about, so that doesn't worry me except for the tediousness of it. But I'm going to use an example of $1 million. I've been involved in this investment a long time, and it's going to pay me. And I want to put, can I put the million in one of my other existing trusts that has been funded by the RV? Or no.
I wouldn't.
So I'd
start with a clean slate, clean back account, clean everything.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. We do have one more caller here. Gary.
Hey, Carol. Gary again.
Hi.
Yeah, you know what? I just forgot my question. It was regarding the subject you were talking about, and I had a mental block here, and it just blew out of my head. So I can't remember what my question was. I apologize. I obviously need more coffee.
You're
just
too young.
Back to what you were thinking
so
about.
Can't blame one on that.
So I'll reorganize my thoughts, and I'll ask you the question some other time, but thank you.
All right. Okay, thank you. Well,
all right.
We're about the top of the hour here, folks. So, Jim, you have anything to say in closing?
Yeah, I do. You had mentioned the IRS. And
what?
I think I mentioned a couple calls ago, and it was that the ADA 22B, we always sent that to the Internal Revenue Service. Lately, they've been asked to send it to the Treasury Department, Washington, D.C.
Aha, uh-huh. You know why that is.
Yeah, they're getting ready to close
down
the IRS.
Giggle. Yeah.
Yep. And they're going to move everything to the Treasury Department, and we're going to go to a flat tax, consumption tax, which is the only legal tax. And when that happens, and we have to worry about, I don't know what we're going to have in place of the EINs, or whatever that may be at that time. But it's looking like it's going that direction pretty fast. So just everybody hold on, because this might be a wild ride here pretty soon. And it's going to be a fun one, too.
I think it's going to be.
I agree with you, Jim. I totally agree with you.
And everything that we're hearing and reading says it's really, really soon. So once again, you know, I would encourage you to be prepared. You know, if you decide that you need a trust now, you know, typical turnaround time right now is less than a week. But obviously, we expect it to be considerably longer post-RV. Our contract prices are still well-priced for denarians at only $14.95 for new clients and $11.95 for additional trusts or family members. We also offer a $300 referral fee for any fully paid new trust. And I would like to thank you all for your attendance and your attention. We look forward to hearing from you soon. My name is Carol Worlius. My telephone number is 425-820-8090. My email is info@indicator.com. Jim, you want to give your contact information?
Sure. My name is Jim Knox. I'm in Salem, Oregon, so I'm West Coast time. My phone number is 503-583-6791, and I am security@indicatorinformation.com. And I try not to work any earlier than 9 o'clock, and I will be taking calls until around 7 o'clock my time. And we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. And thank you again, everybody. We'll talk to you, as Jim says, in a couple of weeks. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Carol. Thanks, Jim. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.